Does mean that you would have a really good crack on this period and the whole issue of purity, etc.
The
person
is here.
Yes, it's all possible. I do believe that I understand that we should start completely start well, but we are coming under huge pressure. And I find it sometimes difficult to put on different hats. So once you focus on something, it actually helps to push ahead and deal with matters very focused and processed. So if the parties will allow for the members to be relieved of their constituency duty, thank you.
Yeah, I'll table my apologies now. I'll make sure that not a senior committee in parliament. when you commit a shared budget, it approaches the effect and the rules of it. Therefore, if Malawi is aggrieved because of the ruling, you can't write for another committee except the host committee. And of course, we have to give it advance what the host committee does share by the speaker and how we want to make a proposal. It's only for that they make class that we must look at it. The previous committee deal with specific other issues, not about the breaking of the rules of the house in terms of the processes and procedures in the house. In the areas that one we should consider it. Of course, we would have our own workshop to deal with this issue. But beyond the shutters we have said, that those comments are that we must move with necessary speed to ensure that a full package is given to all parties. We will encourage all other parties to try to present this to the other caucuses, because we shouldn't. And think that we have finalized everything and all other parties come back, we still start again retracting the rules and that will take longer than expected to do that. Surely I think the court is going to do that when we find appropriate time. Yeah. I think it's good now.
Jefferson, you quite frankly, the court never put under arrest with your comments that you made after discussions in the AD book. I think what we need is a bit of clarity on how we're going to proceed forward. Are we going to take, for instance, five chapters, get written comments from caucuses, and how can they be accommodated, and then deal with the other five thereafter again? Because I'm concerned if we are coming back with caucus sort of comments and adjustments, then we may be starting to tamper right from the beginning, as you have indicated. So please, I think what we also now need is just clarity about deadlines for caucuses to make written comments and make alternative suggestions, and then thereafter to proceed with, you know, as we proceed with the rest of the chapters, some new work. At least we know we have to go back to those and give it final consideration before it is tabled in the rules subcommittee and thereafter the rules committee. I'm not sure we go and do it any other way, then we're going to be completely, you know, reinventing the wheel entirely every time. So I just wanted to make that point.
Okay. No, I think the rules team must look at it again. I know that the ANC was saying that at the end of this month, they invited every member of the ANC who want to make a presentation to write them down and submit to the chief office. Then the chief will collect all of them. There will be no major changes, generally speaking. Very few men are interested in the details of these rules. Therefore, I have no fear that the more members are participating is not going to take a stack at the retrospective. The main thing was, don't forget, that a lot of advocates here in the parliament and some of them have been here longer. They will want to make some input, sometimes the language issue, sometimes just rearranging the rules. But at a content level, I don't think we'll change anything to respect on that. I think we should allow enough space for members. What if we do that then? That members would be able to participate on it. I know that the members would want to participate. You wouldn't deny the ministers who want to participate, but the members of parliament themselves, they want to make some proposals on some of the areas. But there will be no major content issues that I think they would disagree to what already presented. I think we should appreciate that. I don't really expect files and files of submission. And then I think we need to be here and there to assist us to give some detail on some of the issues that we have drafted. So there will be no harm in my view if we do that. Okay, let us move that. Let us then just move.
Thank you. On the first five chapters. So surely that should have been multiplied by
possibly. I think that is very general and being considered in chapter. I know that the ANC we did that in our last focus. Chapter 1 to chapter 9. Okay. And then also we touched on some of the chapters. I think there are more chapters though on the EPCs. And the discussion about the EPCs. And then the issue of the process. I think that I want to
sure it all focuses on the activities or not. The intention was that through draft and in the party, the comments become there to include our comments and we finalize those. And that was the intention. The time is the interest for parties must be pushing to do to ensure that. But there will be no major changes. I don't think any party will change completely what we have done over time.
Okay,
may I
ask what we should be doing though is then writing to all parties, reminding them perhaps again attaching a copy of the chat 1 to 9 and reminding them that the comments must be in by no later than and give them a specific date. So otherwise you're not going to get this and then parties are going to complain that they haven't received it. I certainly know from experience in some instances that they may well be sitting in GFOS offices and they will be forwarded elsewhere, so it may be
okay. Mr. Smith, as you yourself said, ordinary members are not particularly interested in rules. It's not really the case of them, it's anyone who picks them, they tell you want to know what the problem is. So, in a sense, caucuses do have other things on the agenda. They don't prioritise this for the very reason that it's not of much concern to most caucus members. However, all parties are whips, and whips should have an intimate knowledge of the rules, and they should have an interest in it. So I look forward to maybe one appropriate way of substituting the extensive caucus process would be to have a workshop for all Parliament's whips to go through all the proposals. But there you would get an informed multi-party input into what happens. You might have a formal process of adoption by caucuses if you need it. But in terms of interrogating issues, maybe it's whips together you can always form caucuses.
I know
Senator
Smith has
been
very vocal about the quite similar things to my convention in the room, but I believe that it would, we could do both. We could say let's open it for members to want to make it simple, but then also let's just make the effort that the workshop that is intended is maybe a multi-party workshop, so that other parties could join if they want to, and it's not an exclusive community workshop. It basically makes people understand the rules and those adjustments.
Okay, now let us do that. We'll press the parties. Maybe I'll contribute. Okay, now I'm sorry.
How
can I not allow you to explain?
Well, I have my hand up and civil justice and everybody else can also.
Nothing, John.
Okay. The DA has set up its own task team to review this. We have done from chapter 1 to 5. We're working on it, but I think a formal date of telling us what the party deadlines will be up.
Comments
order to avoid to have a general political discussion. And then you wanted to refer to certain rules that would facilitate a record this committee. Otherwise, if you had general political discussion, you would have assessed that to have the rules. You wanted also some specific area in terms of your committee work. What area of the rules that make it difficult for committees of parliament to perform their duties and also to ensure that the work like the activist leaders, the activist parliament should not be people. You said many things that are political. I think there's nothing now that we can go back and start like, analyzing in terms of the issue and all that. But you wanted the rules to assist us really to capture the effect of parliament, particularly this one, and that we should do that. Wanted your colleague section because everyone always says that it's the engine of parliament, therefore very important section in parliament, to assist us to raise issues, to have experience, to have experience in this area of the rules, then just to assist the team really to facilitate and reduce the rules around the committees functioning in other areas there. And so I know that for the one that made my presentation, can I invite you then to do so? But all colleagues, we are invited really to ask for the team from time to time to make some intervention to assist some of the issues.
To assist in the broad intro on how the chapter is put together, it starts with an introduction, it's followed by rules applicable to committees generally, and those are important rules. That's 1.4 through to 1.9. Then it's the rules dealing specifically with subcommittees, and that's followed by rules applicable to both committees and subcommittees. That's mainly public admission issues and when documents may be held as documentation and so on. And then it goes into the different committees one by one. But I think the first part up to the specific committees, in other words up to rule 157, are the key areas of discussion around general powers of committees, how they function, how they're put together, and so on. So I think if we go through the rules part by part, we will be able to move forward quite quickly.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Chair. See, most of you on the table know me. Former Secretary of the National Assembly, we have a former Secretary of the National Assembly, Mr. Hans Kohlmann. We have the first Secretary of the National Assembly, Mr. Carson. And maybe the future one is also on us. So we don't really know. My opening must be in line with the letter that the task team sent to the province as a House Chairperson of Committee to ask him to be present board to nominate people to be here on his behalf to make input. I would like to therefore start off by reading a note that Mr. Froelich has given to this committee, which sets out the four areas or principles that you would like to focus on. And I'll read it in his name as if he is saying it. I wish to apologize to the top team for not being able to attend the meeting. I have, however, engaged with the staff to ensure that meaningful input is made. I will attend as time allows. I would like the task team to ensure that the division takes account of the oversight model of Parliament as well as the sector oversight model as relevant. The report of the independent panel assessment of Parliament, the participation model currently in the final stages of development, as well as the provisions of the so-called Money Act. Naturally, Parliament's new governance structure will remove many subcommittees that now fall under the Rules Committee, and the functions of the Rules Committee will need to be adjusted. In addition, the document prepared by Ms. Padma Chauhan on a review of the legislative process in Parliament provides excellent proposals which needs consideration for possible inclusion in the rules. I would like the task team to make suggestions on whether the rules need to reflect that committees need to adopt minutes of their previous meetings before proceeding with a new meeting. I make this request as some committees tend not to take seriously the need of minutes of meetings which leads to follow-up issues being lost. I would also appreciate the task in considering how we could reinforce right into the rules the final version form of a bill to be put before the House is signed off by the committee and all amendments rejected by a committee are recorded in an amended
A version of the bill, 0251, sub 3, sub C. This will assist in the application of Rule 254, amendments proposed by member before decision of secondary. I would like the task to focus particularly on Rule 152, clerk meetings and its subsequent application in Rules 154 and 155, as we have had opinion from the State Council that this rule is ambiguous and may not stand the test in court. In addition, in view of recent reports, the treatment of confidential documentation may need to be looked at to ensure that they can stand the test of democracy. Last two comments. One, do we need a preamble to the rules, maybe around Constitution 48, which is the oath of members, and 57, which is internal arrangements of the Constitution, so it's not a preamble there. Two, do we need an annotated set of rules that will be detailed in regard to rule application? This will not mean that every rule needs to be annotated. Such annotation will allow for especially new members having a better understanding of the rules or of the application of the rules. Simon, I will make that available to the someone to the caucus. Sir, I would like to also add that Mr. Horrocks, together with myself, I took it from America, who's here with us, and Kevin Hendricks, and Adira Muhammad, sat, and we went through some of the rules that we considered these amendments. We have worked on a document that was worked on by the National Assembly Chamber and the committee section on or around the 16th of July already, where they went into the Chapter 12, and they scrutinized the rules in Chapter 12, and they produced a document. Then I don't know how far this document has got of your meeting. Okay, because there are useful details in respect of specific rules why amendments are needed in this document, and we work with by the staff of the committee section and the table itself. And Mr. Horrocks has gone through this and is in agreement with many of the detailed recommendations made in this report. This is the form of basis that we will focus on. And I understand from Karen was that the process would be rule by rule and therefore making those amendments as go rule by rule. My position on this team is that I've been tasked by the Secretary of Parliament to do three interventions at Parliament, one being the what we call committee intervention in enhancing policy capacity. And we have got a number of little assignments in that, and one is the review of the rules. So that's my position here, my interest in the rule amendments to enhance the function of committees. Of course, Advocate Van der Merwe is here with a legal aspect, especially at Corder, to look at the confidential information when we go into closed meetings and those sorts of legal issues, because it's come up over the last 2 years. When we went to close a meeting, we are in court again in an interdictive closing meeting. So, and this sometimes leads to that confidential document coming in, but if we close from meetings, it's also a concern. I hope we will be joined later by some senior staff of the committee section, and as I said, Mr. Project will join us as a lead advisor.
Advance. We would like them not to move from chapter by chapter, but part by part. You already said the cost of the issues that seven editions. Do we have one? That's wonderful. I know that organized and better. List of policies.
The chapter was drafted and finalized immediately after the adoption of the Constitution in 1996 by the subcommittee for sitting at the time of the chair, Johnny DeLange and Advocate Brunan Tuka. And they were very comprehensive. You'll find that there's, if anything, too much detail, although I think the current trend is to have too much detail rather than too little. The first rule, 121, list of committees, seems innocuous. It seems to to give members a sense of the different committees that are that exist in the Delta in the rules subsequently. In point of fact, it's more important than that. It makes the point that these committees and only these committees exist in terms of the functioning of the National Assembly, in terms of also being covered by powers and privileges, freedom of speech, for instance. You cannot set up some kind of forum and give it whatever name you like and claim freedom of speech for it. It's formally set up in terms of the rules and in terms of the Constitution. And so these, in one, this all of the committees that are in existence, and it may provision in I for ad hoc committees that may be added. And I want to suggest, in fact, that it may be necessary to change the title to list of committees and other forums. You'll find, for instance, in the rules that in this chapter that chief of forum is listed under committees. Maybe it should be identified as a committee. Maybe we could use the definition of committees and say committees are a body service committee as well as other forum that may be formally established by the National Assembly that would then cover the need for freedom of speech and privilege of members in all these other forums as well.
Okay, so then that's a proposal.
Would that not mean that all those forums, like the chief of become open meetings? Should we then have something built in because there'd be a need for some of those forums to be closed for?
Okay. And I want to
I was actually tagging this little bit of I stumbled across and then I saw that there were some things in there for the other side who wanted to know what it is. This is the book that was established, that was printed for the first edition in 2011. And it's the Manual for Parliamentary Committee. Now, this is actually a very interesting little booklet. And I just wanted to suggest, if Mr. Matsuda will allow, if the rest of the members will just be get a copy of this, because it actually has very good proposals on how committees should function. The only problem is that I know most of the committees don't function like that. And that is the problem line, that probably is the underlying historic problem. And we will have to see, because after all, it is an organ of state, parliament. We will have to determine what are the, for instance, the formal procedures, such as the formal adoption of the minutes, how we keep records, etc. What should be captured specifically? Some of it is covered in the rules, but
I would have a message.
say that other committees may be established, but only by resolution of the assembly or the rules committee. Now, I think I can't imagine in what circumstances the rules committee would establish a committee. And I think this, in fact, relates back to the time when the rules committee was also in charge of the administration of parliament, and that the rules committee was there to create other committees for purposes of administration. And I think therefore the deed would possibly be admitted.
I think there's a no. If we look at this, it refers to the mediation committee and the constitutional review committee statement. Now, where do we capture that? I know that in 1212 it says other committees may be established, but only by institution, etc. But since these exist, should they not also be noted in 1211?
Not
all of them, no.
Question? Just a suggestion. Couldn't the rules simply say the assembly has the following committees, those established by legislation, those established by the rules, and those established by resolution house? In other words, under this order. And that still makes a distinction between those that are covered by the constitutional provisions of privilege and so on, and those that are not covered. So, for example, the difference between a committee and an administrative forum. Because, you see, committees can change. What we've just discussed now is, for example, the Committee on Auditor General is not kind of a standing committee. So the committees change. Every time it happens, you have to change the rules. So couldn't you have a sort of the general legal sort of necessities by just having a very broad rule that covers all the bases?
Without mentioning committee, just to ensure that if the House takes this issue, we don't have to amend the rules according to the rules, and then we do that from there. Is that possible? Kind of the law.
Yeah.
My that was my view initially as well when this rule was created, but I saw afterwards that it's actually useful for members to be able to at a glance say these are the committees that have been formally recognised as formally operational, and they're all, by the way, standing committees except ad hoc. Standing means for the formulation of the parliament. These committees have to exist, have to be set up immediately when the parliament starts, and they stay in existence until we get the last sitting of the parliament of the inner term. And so I think the idea was to assist members by upfront telling them these are the committees that exist and no others.
What about the committees or maybe subcommittees established by the key code 8? Where would we start that today?
Is that in the subcommittee and over the past 2 years we've adopted a stance that and we've also incorporated into the rules like that committees that are required by statute we call standing committees. So it's with the notion of standing committee being through a duration. So that's what I didn't say, the duration of parliament. So that's what there's a shift in emphasis there where we now committees that are like committee on the Auditor General, standing committee on finance, standing committee on regulations, those are established in terms of statutes, and for that reason we call them standing committees. And we've done away with calling other committees standing that were created with regulation of parties, like an organization system.
I think the former perspective suggests that we should have a rule that is permissive of whoever is empowered to establish the committee in this administration. Should that as well include a list of those that exist without being exhausted? I think the two views can be met.
Okay? Let us complete that. Yes,
Mr. Hannigan proposed earlier, or somebody did a kind of thing actually, that you could have an annotated version of the rules for members. So you could have this general permissive clause, and then in annotation, you could just put
we don't have that. So I think it's highly a correct way. We can have a general flow that of course is permitted, but we can also tie some committees that are same committees. So the deal for portfolio committees depends on how many committees that are independent. I think we should try it.
Just in response to Ms. Gullion, the CRA, that is one of the bodies that would be in the joint rules. It's a joint body. That would have to be written into the joint rules. And it would have the same power to create subcommittees, which would necessarily also be mentioned in the joint rules, because they check. But it would be possible to list them. I think the my own experience has been that over time, various forums or bodies were set up informally at various times, and they assumed the powers of ordinary committees, or thought that they could assume the powers of ordinary committees, and they may have taken decisions which were critical because they were not formally recognized bodies. One must not lose sight of the fact that the power resides with the National Assembly and the National Assembly only, and it's the National Assembly that should create bodies and recognize bodies and empower bodies. And the Constitution is also very specific in that when the House sets up committees, they should identify composition, decision-making powers, other powers, the movement reports, and so on. Those that are critical issues which the rules should always consistently reflect in respect of all formally created bodies.
Just wondering, is there any place in the rules, I suppose I'm actually, that is question arises from what Ms. Hanning was saying now about less formal bodies. There are informally created multi-party kind of forums which deal with specific issues which are supported by Parliament in the sense that they have committee rooms, they get allocation staff to assist them, and making a sort of, so not just parties getting together casually at lunchtime to meet in the dark corner. They kind of have a mandate and they do some work and they report to somebody else. Are those capable, for example, we have this legislative sector forum. Does that sort of thing fit into the rules anyway? They're not committee in the formal sense, but do you need to in some way make provision for them, or do they just exist as a parallel informal system of committee?
The first consideration would be how do you finance them if they require funds? That would have to be backed up by some kind of recognition, formal recognition. And it may be that you can set up informal bodies which, if you like, do it in a formal way. Identify its informal status, but still recognize it formally.
Yes,
Julie?
You want to talk about it?
No.
I know that's a very deep chapter.
No, it is a complex chapter. I just wanted to say that I think we should make a note to determine the powers of the different categories of committees. How are we going to capture that to make it very clear what of these committees are reporting to what structure, so that they don't become sort of units operating on their own. I mean, we have had experience of that in the past. You know very well what I'm referring to. Now, just to get everything in order. Secondly, I think it's important we don't have any definition for a committee or for the sake of a committee such as a standing committee. What makes a difference from a portfolio? And I think we need to all just clear up and make a note that should be clarified in the definition, apart from be very clear on the powers and the functions of this specific different category. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I'm trying to remember when Mansour raised the issue of people's formal and informal committees. I'll give you the example of the Ethics Committee, which has in its rules the ability to close the meeting if required. But the Ethics Committee, to come to mind, is a joint committee, as I understand. So it doesn't get raised in that. But I'm just wondering if we should not, given that the Ethics Committee, for example, is one of the most important committees that a member should be aware of. A member should know what to expect to speak on ethics. Should we not be at least referring in here to committees such as the Ethics Committee or referring to joint committees and listing those committees as well, just so that members are aware that their committees other than as are indicated in the particular book.
Okay.
Another one that we are raising, though, that will also be identified. There is
19 years of this student. What works? What doesn't work? What is improvement? What we should change? What we should develop further? And what are the areas that are that we are contesting? Because they are no longer behind. They are no longer fitting. And then don't forget that our rules, generally speaking, are Westminster system rules. And then our rules are not hybrid rules. They're not the rules that hybrid, all other experiences and attributes of all parliaments. The intention there was to have almost a hybrid type of rules that capture all other prospective experiences all over parliament, democratic parliament. And then that's the thing that we wanted to have enough space to do that. It is a rule somewhere in Kenya that is you can understand it, you can assist us to clarify some of the issues. You can bring forward some of those areas. But we shouldn't reinvent the wheel, there is no need for us to do so. But you must consider that there's 19 years of experience. Members of Parliament, I know that not every member knows the senior rule. A large number of members really know they've been here for 20 years. They don't know the rules as well. Therefore, we must try to encourage members first to appreciate the rules. In fact, one caucus was said that if we're a week, we don't know the rules, then no way. Because there's no reason why we should be a week if we can't know the rules. And then I just tell us we have to catch all other attributes. And then we don't talk about the areas where rules are suspect, this way and that way. And then we are taking, this is the rules structure according to what has been written all along. And then there's new experiences. The intention of the drafting of the rule or the review of the rules are also to tell that there's new experiences. And when we think that this one is being used to work in 2016 century England, can't work now, it is cast in a track protection, what we want to do. That's why I think the virtual world, I think we must move in that still. And then it is these things we would try to put the rules upon it this way. And then 121. Sub 1, A to I, would also delete the rules that have committees that are no longer there, heads of some of the committees. And I think we are proposing that 121, 2, AP, we remove the rules from the because we're putting there, because we're almost also dealing with administration, it's no longer there now. Administration demands is dealt by PO, and therefore we should remove that. And then we should also try to. If you get a training for this training committee, what are the training committees? I think the point that you're raising was, what are the powers of this committee? Because otherwise the point that you're raising that we can just have an inter-faith committee and we give money to it. But we don't even know how, where does it account? Where does it account? I think the point that you're saying must be due to every committee that is sent out by the house, it must account somewhere. Because we have to give money. And then there's the court transfer, you have to give money. Where does this thing account into action? Because otherwise you could give resources and support in terms of administration, but you are not even sure how they account in terms of the running of the house. I think can be very problematic. You want to protect members, so that they don't end up with interfaith, you call it a religious gathering, first time state, and then they spend a lot of money. And then after that, you don't even know anything. The ship was full of money, wanted a report. And then they said, I don't account to you. And another one wanted a report. He said, hey, this is you. You want all this report and team decided to do what? No report was ever submitted. Because it's not clear, but it's set up by house, you are giving money to it. I think that's the point of your case. That when you give money, you are set up a committee by your house. We should first know what are the responsibilities of this community. Where does it account? And then how it operates in the committee. Because we can have committees, faith committees, members not allowed to enter sometimes. It can cause a real havoc in terms of the money of parliament. Giving the experience of members that can be taken to court from time to time. And it will be unfair for the people to be taken to court or faith face of the committee in time. And I think that's what we want to raise, really. I think as we would capture some of the essence of what I'm trying to do. And the advocates are here who will advise from time to time. And then don't hesitate to raise your hand and assist us to do this thing. Yes, you can't do it.
In that context, I'm thinking the meaning and definition of these committees should be at the space of the definition. They must not necessarily be in the enrollment.
In definitions. In a definition, those are committees.
We were talking earlier about just the possibility of linking other committees together, but what's not useful in this little matter is if the different parts of committees, as alluded to earlier, if they're committed to establishment of the Constitution, then it has a committee to establish in terms of statutes. For instance, the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence, Standing Committee on Appropriation, Select Committee on Appropriation, Standing Committee on Finance, etc. So, I mean, as far as the CA is concerned, obviously we would list those. And then there's another category where it says committee established in terms of rules of Parliament. And then they have both committees there and email committees, etc. So, actually, we need to unpack that. I have a question mark out. If we do incorporate that now,
I know for a fact that the rugby team of this parliament conference plan every year sponsored from an individual person. Now, yeah, I have to know that for a fact. If they tour overseas with the official Promise organization, now, Parliament should actually decide whether that money couldn't be better spent elsewhere in Parliament, quite frankly. Now, I'm going to say that the Parliament even is hardly aware of the hundreds of thousands of rand that is going to the Rugby Association of Parliament. It's travelling overseas several times a year. It's important. I think that it's absolutely essential. Committees are not allowed to receive sponsorship without the approval of Parliament. Why should sports bodies be entitled to? Well, committees are the function of Parliament. Sports bodies are an after, a party, and yet they are receiving hundreds of thousands of rand. So it's a point that I need to bring into the rules that nobody in Parliament can receive sponsorship without the authority of wherever.
Jim, I'm concerned that we start trying too much into the rules. I mean, rugby clubs or rugby sessions or rugby, whatever you want to call this, fine, let them exist. Maybe there's somewhere controlling where they get the funding from. But we really, truly, I would urge against trying to write too much into the rules. Where do you start? The question again is, where do you stop?
Just on that, I really want to be careful about writing too much into rules. My problem is, how can you allow sports organisations or, for example, multi-sport breed group, whatever, to get sponsorship, and yet your committees, who really do make a major difference to Parliament, cannot obtain sponsorship without authority. So there's got to be some sort of rule that says anybody in Parliament can only obtain sponsorship on the basis of authority.
The situation is, if you give example, a bunch of MPs get together and they form a rugby club. They treat the sponsors, they can get in, it doesn't matter. The question is whether they're representing the organisation. If they represent an institution, then there is this decision should be considered. You can't stop the freedom flow of members doing what they like, but if it's institutional, then you need to have an institutional responsibility.
No, that's fine. I think that is a critical point. I think we must also speak to what we have said on the rules, which is because the rules won't really regulate every aspect of the but Parliament also is a vocal body. That's why I try to separate procedural matter from program management matter. At the point that I think we are trying to raise, that if Parliament gives resources, whether it's human or financial resources, surely that's only in some way. We must be clear as members, what is the funding, and then what is that? Because otherwise you can need money and the only resources here. I commit to that idea. Some such an idea that I think they can move around. In fact, the four countries both in the same place and then the past called half. And the member of the Parliament is appeared and no one can account for that. It could be a problem. I think some way we could have raised things out to avoid some of the areas. I don't think the point that our experience must also put in the rules. What is practical on daily basis? What is our experience of 19 years? What do we have learned from other parliaments in Missouri and DRP? We have conducted research everywhere in the world. And they surely capture some of the elements that assist us to clarify some of the issues. But there should be something that happens by accident, because it can cause problems in our understanding of our
I thought
we were trying to say that the rules must explicitly provide for the establishment of this informal structures that Parliament wants to constitute. That is the point.
I just want to say that previously we used to have
know, all the subcommittees that pay for things like, you know, member support and library services and catering and all those kinds of things, those were included as subcommittees of the Rules Committee. And because Parliament became so big and all that kind of administrative stuff became very cumbersome in the week, there was the decision was taken to separate full business, the house business, from the more administrative kind of issue, which would include things like the rugby clubs and stuff like that. Now, the thing is, we say that the Rules Committee is the most senior committee of Parliament. There is an equivalent, and that is the PRA. So joint rules and the PRA are the two senior, in terms of joint business, of the two houses. Now, all PRA reports are supposed to go through the houses. And I think for things like rugby clubs, this is another person I'm saying, but for things like the sports clubs and things like that, for each parliament the needs are sometimes different. You only need to have different requirements to come to different parliaments. The core business remains core and it's you know, the business of the house and committees and things like that. So each parliament can adopt for itself. The houses will adopt those reports, and by the houses adopting it, it gives the kind of power behind the decision, in other words, the resolution of the house. So things about sponsorships and things like that can be incorporated into the POA policies for a particular part of the duration. And once the house adopted it, it carries the kind of power so it can be influenced. You don't need, I think, to incorporate it into the rules. I think we should really be careful to keep the rules to the core business of the house.
I just want to emphasize the point that the Constitution envisages that all kinds of committees will be set up, whether they're forum committees. It goes further to require of necessarily to ensure that the membership of these forums, whatever they are representatives of parties. If you go to informal bodies set up by a group of members for themselves, by themselves, if they're not multi-party or sufficiently multi-party, do they have a status at all? Can they claim resources from Parliament? One really has to, what I'm saying is that the Constitution and the rules spell out the fact that all forums formally created, regardless of their function, have to be approved at an official level by Parliament, for Parliament to recognize them as formal bodies of the National Assembly. There's other bodies, there's friendship groups that members may study voluntarily. You may even be able to convince the POA to provide you with some resources, but they need to be controlled. The National Assembly has asked, that's where the power resides, and the National Assembly must decide which informal bodies are going to recognize what its functions are, what its membership is, where its resources come from. It's a very dangerous terrain if all kinds of informal bodies are going to proliferate and are going to suddenly pop out of the woodwork and say, we've recommended the following, you know, and parties said, we're not members of that, where does that come from? How can we not participate in that? That's unconstitutional. So there are major issues in principle behind this.
Okay.
I listen to what Mr. Hunting says, and obviously I agree with Mr. Dossie's said, but Sybil is jumping up and down the excitement because she seems to be agreeing with her.
Yeah.
But I mean, the sports council exists. The sports council exists. The rugby union falls, but the rugby club falls under the sports council. Where do you stop? I mean, you know, surely the rugby section is doing what it does under the guise of the sports council. The sports council exists through the speaker's permission and through the rules. I think I don't know who does. But where do you start? Where do you stop writing these things down?
Sure.
I thought the discussion earlier was we agreed, let's not list everything in here. Let's try and create some principles. So all we were doing in this discussion is adding one level of complexity to work. You have the constitutionally established committees, the established by the rules, and we're saying those established through silent procedure. And all of this is a general principle. The actual detail of problems comes from regulatory things later. All you want to say is that they be established and that they receive some form of support.
And then
that's
it.
That's it.
Oh,
yeah. We don't have to spill the detail of this document.
Well, okay.
Not the detail.
It is going to be captured and extracted, and they are still going to look at it. And it will be put detail on our rules. And away from their core function. And otherwise, you end up there and do something like this. The rules are there to guide the operation. The sports council, whatever. This is how it is.
If the sports council reports a fabric mistake in the theory.
Yes.
Yeah, so there are basically indirectly rules to apply because the POA, although it's not yet written into the joint rules, should be. And therefore, ultimately, the POA is reporting to the houses. So ultimately, there is a lines of accountability. So I think that, you know, at least theoretically, there are some systems in place. But I think we do get general thrust of the discussion about what to include in the rules. Obviously, we can work in the middle of the draft and come up with ideas which we can still put to you in for further discussion. The issue of how much, how many committees to list in the rules, and whether what should go into the definitions and what should stay in the rules, maybe we could be able to look at that and come back to the committee.
Chair, I just want to say a lot of discussion coming out here, good discussion, but might not be for the in rules committee. So you might want to consider when reporting to the subcommittee, you might want to have a rule amendment, but in addition, these are the factors, and most of the factors are joint matters. So on your report to the subcommittee, decide the rule amendment, have an update, the report of this party, highlight these issues.
We should just move, I think, we may have to. I will do that to make some recommendation in our area.
She put me some fresh coffee and tea out of the night.
Very kind of you.
No.
Okay, let's go to Ben.
Oh, yeah,
5 minutes. 5 minutes,
right? Okay,
I'm not sure.
Thank you. I'm writing an extension VCT on apartment, public, on the youth representation in Parliament. So basically, very basically, you look at average age MPs is about 50. Great percentage of voters age between like 18 and
55.
So what does that mean in respect to representative democracy? So that's the kind of thing I'm exploring. Okay, my name is Pearl.
Is that a PhD at all?
No, master's.
And your academic advisor?
Well, I'm still doing a proposal, so I haven't
Done
a proposal. Who's your advisor?
It's Bina Tamaria.
Okay, I don't know.
Yeah. It's sort of in conjunction as well with Robert Matthews.
Yeah, I know him, yeah. He's the head of department, isn't he? Yeah. Does he still do Afro-Romantic, you know?
He does, yeah.
Does he?
Yeah.
Okay. He used to work at DASA, and he used to closely... Abraham used to be sort of affiliated to DASA, so he used to do a lot of work with him. That's my open number, my phone, 2009.
Okay.
That's my email.
Okay. you come, I can buy the back food and the inside and right? Okay, no, we're just committed to work with something. Question, you can ask how the stage is like this. My people work in the inside of you because God is not the same. I want to commit to you. I did pay the business. I offered a translation on one side. I was too
committed.
All the time, I'm too certain of the commitment I was too certain of that talk to you. I'm so committed. All of that. Now that I think back, I'm glad I didn't do that. The only thing that I saw the boy got now is
fighting. Isn't DOA puts a report before National Assembly, and the National Assembly accepts the report?
that's the same thing as the National Assembly resolving to accept the consequences of what's in the report. So in other words, a resolution of the committee and adopting a report of the PRA is the same thing. So the only thing we've deleted here is B. We deleted B earlier. So A is also there. And it covers the situation.
Okay, then let us proceed then. I think chapter, what is part one, is the number 22. Do you want
that?
Yeah,
you're
waiting for that one?
Yeah.
Okay. Not the spot candle.
No.
This is exactly an example of where what happens in reality does not mirror what's in the rules. I mean, the rules are just plain silly. What's happened for the last 20 years is committees, established subcommittees, other than the situation referred to in sub B, which is the internal administrative thing. Okay. Other than that, they still appoint committees on a regular basis, and I mean in many committees where that's done. If you have a, like, for example, normally the legislative process, if you have a complex bill that's taking a long time to process, and it's a long and complex, very often committees establish multi-party subcommittees to facilitate the processing of that and report back to the committee.
Mm.
Now, the way this rule is written now doesn't take cognizance of that at all. So I don't think you need to have anything where a subcommittee of that type, at least, it has to be authorized by the committee. No. It should be, a committee should be able free to do, create a subcommittee unless, put it in the negative, unless the rules committee does not. In other words, they can do it freely unless the committee says you can't do it. Rather than saying, if you want to do it, you must get permission from this committee. I mean, that's unnecessary. So I think we should just reverse the order there. And, you could be authorized by the study if you want to, by the assembly, I'm not worried by that. But basically, I think there should be a relative freedom for a committee to establish a subcommittee. I think the prior question maybe would be, what is the status of the subcommittee? What is its powers? Unless you're just inferring, unless it's just common sense that a subcommittee, given authority and it has to report back and all decisions. It doesn't make any decision, it only makes recommendations, and the plenary body has to approve it. If that's just taken as granted, you have to say it, then I make a proposal.
I think, with all credit to the original objects of these rules, if you look at the portfolio committees 203, subcommittees, portfolio committee may appoint a subcommittee for among its members, so they provide the individual committee the powers of that committee to appoint subcommittees. And in 122, it merely says may appoint subcommittee only when, and second sub 2 is fourth, I'm sorry, when there is provision for such appointment in these rules. So in each case, there's a committee, and the committee, under the rules for the committee, it says may appoint subcommittees.
So you, what you say, that's a, you've got to need the two together.
Respect of each committee, you're required to identify composition, appoint the general terms here, but it's adopted from each committee separately. Later.
We have to take it that to do all the committees that function in the area.
That is, for instance, after the 32 rule 1 2 6 1, which is appointment procedures. Unless these rules provide otherwise, the parties appoint the members of the committee and advise the speaker accordingly. That's current, that's the practice, and that's what it should be. And then names of the members appointed must be published in the ADC without delay. My question that I want to raise is that I'm aware that at various times ad hoc committees and other committees have been appointed, formally appointed by resolution of the House, and parliament are not forthcoming, so that there is a decision of the House to appoint a committee and cannot start functioning because parties are not holding their names. In fact, if you look at rules 2 to 8 sub 4, it specifically provides there with respect to a particular committee, that's the ad hoc joint committee. But if the names of members of the party have not been so submitted within 2 working days after the speaker has called upon the chief whip of the party to submit the names, such party must be regarded as not willing to participate in the committee. So the idea is that one party not presenting its name should not prevent the committee from beginning to function. Otherwise, the same party could jeopardize functioning of the committee.
If the ruling party is a bit tidy, I mean, the opposition would automatically constitute the quorum of that committee and could be the witness.
Some formal pressures be allowed to
merge for the sake of committee representation. So instead of having 10 small parties all having one member each, they could, through some formal process which is proposed here in the Whitman Amendment, through the Speaker's office, be agreed to be recognised as the singular group of whatever, and then allocated for the representation accordingly. Now, some form of, I mean, that's a practical response to the problems being raised, because it is practically a problem. I mean, if we have parties who are as in committees where the party is formally, they don't have 100% membership because the smaller party can never make it, and they never make it. You can see them ever, but they're formally members. And that's really just plain silly. We just ain't doing things for sake of it. But if you allow a situation where parties could, to agreement with the Speaker's office, say, we four parties nominate X to represent all of us, and then you have a representation in that sort of classical way, it might help. So, Dr. Anderson did put a proposal to this committee as a new clause, 25A, in his submission, so maybe one could look at it.
Let me
just
pass on to the last one.
Chair, I actually want to raise an issue. I'm kind of brief because of the subject of court, and I don't know if you want to raise it before the government.
No, you can hold on. I think it's useful.
I'll come in on this one. And I'm not sure if it is anyway. It's been for parties with your files in terms of their policies. But I'm not sure how party A can represent your policy in another committee when they're not even there. Because you do differ on policies, even if you are small parties. And I think we should do that. But also, I think we should also consider why not the voting in committees should be proportional. It should be made, it should be net. Where a committee, where there are five members in the committee, but their vote is proportional to election last. And then we don't have a situation that we have to have 20 members in the committee or 5 members in the committee. It should be proportional. That if I'm 60% and 50%, and if you are 4%, you are 4%. The issue is the number of people in terms of all this one vote is there. But to find something, the column can also work it out in terms of a proportional representation. I think the good idea, though, parties come together. I'm not sure how they will represent minority of funds and all this issue. But very creative idea. Let me pass.
Why
didn't
it not possible for all the parties to come to
the
agenda on a committee? Is a rule that allows any member to attend any committee meeting and participate. But of course they may not vote. So I thought I should make that point. But also the current composition of committees is 12 members. And for other parties, the smaller parties take 1 member.
Okay, thank you.
So you have to have the majority party, the DA, both an IEP, and all the other parties, one collective.
But there are 13 members. The point that I want to raise is that every member of parliament has a responsibility. You can't have 13 members of parliament. And then they come if they want to come, they don't come if they don't want to come. That is the problem. See, that's why most of our parties must have committees where they are full members. Even if they are one party, every committee that we are full member of, that we account as any other member in those committees, then we can quote in other committees than we have. Because what is happening today, we have to have members who are almost free agents. Just move this side, they move. I think it's wrong in general to do that. Even if you are one person party, you must have a committee. You choose which committee you want to be a full member of, and then you can vote in other committees. Because that is a very difficult thing what is happening here. Members, you can't hold them accountable for anything. They come to me, they disappear, they come to this thing, disappear. I think we should really look at this point in general. Because the one that you are raising is important for. Because that's my experience in general, that even if you are one person party, if you are a full-time member of human sector, you must go on this one, a full-time member of this committee. And therefore, you are responsible as any other member. Because what happens is you end up with members of one person party member come to parliament when they think they should come to parliament. And then they have freedom of moving everywhere under the sun. are not in the area where for Parliament. And then I think can't be that because I think people who are not in Parliament come to this parent and then have to come.
My constitution here, but that say that the committees must be representative, that the parties must be representative proportionally in committees. Because if it does say that, then literally, if you take that literally, and the colleagues are here, how do you then qualify that in terms of rules to say that, for example, a minority party is not represented? I mean, I know obviously you're faced with a practical, very practical situation, but the constitution is not always very practical. The Constitutional Court doesn't necessarily always look for practicalities.
We have the largest number of parties. 13. So clearly, we've had very, very strong scoring systems. The minute that you go to extend it unreasonably, you're going to not be able to constitute as a body. So what does the Constitution ask us to do? It only asks in 57(2). By the way, I just wanted to read the introductory page of 57(2). It says the rules and all the national assemblies must rely for A, the establishment, the composition, powers and functions, procedures and duration of its committee. So that I think we should also take it from here. But then it says in B, the participation in the proceedings of the assembly and its committees of minority parties represented in the assembly in a manner consistent with democracy. It does not say in proportion to ensure full participation of all parties. It doesn't matter. It says in a manner consistent with democracy. So clearly, if you are a 0.4% or a 0.1% party or a 1% party, you cannot expect out of 400 members in the National Assembly, you will have seen. And there's full participation. And then if we have a representative of smaller parties, then that representative can say, I have a mandate from that committee, or from that party, to submit an objection of the minority party. Because then you are also requested to register that party's objection or whatever. Except if that party has an opportunity, once that stands in the National Assembly, also, you know, record its objection. You must understand, if you're a one-member party or a three-member party, it's a nightmare to operate. Whether you want them to be a full member, it's not achievable.
Not all that truly is kind of right. We are trying to be kind to them. If I'm Tula, I decide in Parliament that I'm going to serve only in one committee as a full member, and then I deal only with the human section and committee, I'm a full member here as a person. And another one, small party, which is this one, the Asabo one, another committee there, who would be called in a harm in Parliament. The point that I'm raising is that every member of Parliament must be accountable. You can't have the floating members of Parliament. We've got no responsibility, but that's why I said always not in Parliament, because before it was a full stage. The point that I'm saying that we can't have a situation like that is unfair, first and foremost, to have a member of parliament who decides if you wake up early, you go to a meeting, no one can even hold them accountable for anything. The point that I'm raising there is that every member of parliament must have at least one full time. If you admit we are one in your party after election next year, we must be able to dismiss the full time member of this committee. A full member of this committee must be responsible like any other member of the committee. You can't have members who got no business about how parliament works. And because it's a problem, at least for us, it's a big problem as well. And it can't be addressed by the rules forum. The rules must address this problem. Because every person must be accountable in this house. Anyway, we are full-time members of parliament. You can't have a situation that 30 members of parliament.
because even they don't report anything, they seem to stay away from Parliament completely, some of these committees. Not accepting as to address this issue. But we'll look at the cards, but we will find a better way. Thank you.
Well, yeah, on that particular point, I was saying we're essentially straying away a little bit from the issue of membership of committees. It's a real problem you're referring to, but I do take a completely contrary view to you. And that is essentially, although at one level technically we are sort of Parliament in our employees in a sense, but the reality is in fact it's the party. And we've had a long-standing position in Parliament, parties have a long-standing position, shall I say, that ultimately parties are responsible for deploying their members within the legislature and how they deploy them, and to an extent they hold them accountable for their behaviour. Mm-hmm. And we've had this to and froing about is it the role of the institution or the role of the party to regulate this kind of thing. And it's not fully resolved, but I don't hold the view that you must have deputy president, every cabinet has to be member of the committee as well. Well, not true. Party leaders do have to be members of the committee. Well, yes and no, maybe not. So if a member, and you were referring to particular members who never arrived, there are other members, of course, who never arrived in Parliament too, that we can think of, who haven't been here for 19 years, who have showed up in Parliament more effective about that many times in 20 years. The fact that they don't have Parliament to participate is not the institution's problem, in my view. It's the role of the party to sort it up. Exactly. So I wouldn't want any rules like that. But, you know, we're discussing this issue now, which is the membership.
Okay.
Thank you. Something I feel very strongly about. Martin Dillon and I sat on a committee some years back, and we're dealing with the remuneration of political officers. And we look at the constitution to motivate the salaries for members of parliament. And if you look at the constitution, I have to differ with Mr. Smith. Whilst you've been brought up by your political party, once you become a member of parliament, your obligation is to Parliament first, and political parties should start reading their constitution and realise that once a member of Parliament is put into Parliament, their first obligation is to Parliament, and then to Parliament. And I have a major problem with that, and I think it's something that the party should start taking note of. Either make bring about constitutional amendments or attend to parliamentary duty. While I'm on the floor, I just want to raise the other issues that I wanted to bring in. I don't really fall in under rules specifically. It may fall in under POA. But I think it is something that needs to be noted by the committee and dealt with. I've been serving on the Parliament Board of Trustees now for 19 years. Initially as a member of Parliament, now as a continuation member. We have a major, major issue with non-attendance of members of Parliament on as Board of Trustees. Now, somehow, Parliament has to deal with that issue as well. Members that are put onto bodies, such as the Board of Trustees for Parliament, or pension schemes, or whatever the case may be, these are not just subcommittees of Parliament. Members cannot just attend them when they want to. They have additional responsibility. And as Parliament is being let down horribly, and the Board of Trustees is being put into a compromised situation, every time members who are put on that board do not attend. So somehow, that issue also needs to be dealt with. I don't know how we're going to deal with this, but there needs to be a note put in somewhere that once individuals are nominated to serve on outside boards representing Parliament, they need to fully fulfill their responsibilities. And I don't know how you're going to do that.
No, I think we've got more.
But we need to bring that
into you. And I will carry out the title of our report, similar to what I highlighted in the parties must distinguish membership and attendance. And I think the point is about membership. And what we want to deal with membership, I mean attendance and sustain. I think it is fair to say that a member should at least belong to a committee.
No.
In fact, anyway, the part of this one that develops a member of parliament is parliament wide. And in fact, I know that until now, that constitution is a tool. The member of parliament is primarily about parliament. The point is that the opponent by parties can't be right. That a party
the parliament should not work because the party decided to deploy people outside their primary responsibility to the parliament. The whole party issue, another issue, not there. The point that we made is to try to find a thing for your doing that already. Every member must belong to the committee. Even if there's one member, one committee, belong to that one, and then others can prove. Right. We must know that we are a member of this committee. That all other members of the committee must do their work there.
The problem is one obviously of attendance, as was pointed out. Then we deal with the sector on the forum. I generally agree that in practical terms, I don't think there's a problem in terms of party representation on committees. When the Rules Committee first meet after an election, they identify the committees, they agree on the numbers on each committee, and I have chaired a number of meetings of opposition parties where they combine to sit down and decide amongst each other who's going to serve on which committee in full-time capacity. And that's always worked in practical terms. The other point made by Mr. Trotter is quite correct that was specifically also anticipated and written into the rules that because of that right almost of every member to be on any and every committee that's interested, they can attend. They can participate in any committee meeting. They just may not vote. But that opportunity to vote comes when the report of that committee comes to the House, so then they obviously exercise their vote as well. So I think that was intended to cover all of these concerns around representation and composition of committees. But the point to make is an important one, so in terms of the minority, but the smaller parties obviously have a problem to attend any number of committees. But how do you ensure that they attend in a full membership capacity at least one committee? The only way to do that would be through some kind of attendance recourse and perhaps a provision that if a particular full-time member of a committee and there are many from all parties, does not attend meetings of that committee for six successive meetings, for argument's sake, then that member loses full membership of that committee. So it can be given to somebody else. Because the smaller parties are members of those committees, they never attend, it creates major core problems. Because they make up the 12 members in the committee, and three of them are smaller parties and they never attend. Your quorum is 6 or 7, and almost always you'll be unable to function in strict terms because they undermine the ability of the committee to take any decisions at all. And so those are difficult problems they have to be on.
Okay, let us flag the issue. We'll try to draft it accordingly and make some proposal. And then the Republic will come with that creative ways, but it's not about that. Every member must be every one committee. It's very easy. There are five parties, that is one person's party. And surely not all of them will be in one committee, all of them. One will be in health, one will be in whatever, that's cause problems in terms of quorum. But they must have at least one committee where they have full member. They will throw in whatever other committee they want to put on. But you can't have people who have nothing to do with membership of committee. You can't just do that. I think we'll work it out and find out actually. Yeah, that's been having very creative views on that. Maybe we want us to move now.
Yeah. I'm not quite sure if you're following what we've
I'm not sure we're following this floor by floor because we're jumping. I thought we would finish 122 and then we're going to go 123, 124. We jumped straight to 125. I don't know where we're jumping now, but I'm going to jump back to 124 because I don't know if we're going in order.
We put with these other clauses. And then if there is any clause, just lay the point.
Yeah, so I'd like to raise 124 before we got to come.
124.
Yeah. So 124B.
You know, we have a problem, I think, a general problem, and it applies, I think, somewhere else as well. This issue of where we have a rules committee, we have rules, and then whenever it's inconvenient for the rules to be applied, you just have a generic provision that the city can overrule anything. And we have here, so here we say, the provisions of the rules apply. And then you basically say, the International Assembly deems otherwise. Now, that's really not appropriate. If you have rules, the rules should cover situations. You don't have a generic term like that which allows you to escape clause. And it happens in the House quite often. It's actually quite annoying.
And I object to be a bit to it. You think you have the rules, follow the rules. If the rules aren't suitable, change the rules, but follow the rules. That's have an escape rule all the time. So this key, I like to remove the phrase or a resolution of the Kindi.
I think given those the dimension, given in the judiciary, they look at rules in fact. They are not prescriptive. They are enabled to deliver the old rules. We should not be selling the rules. The rules are such as us.
Can I choose a policy?
Resolution of the house that can be a copy to the rules would have to recognize that it's doing them and would have to say, no,
notwithstanding who A, B, and C. And that is a kind of suspension of the rules in those circumstances. And that suspension would require, under the new proposals, a majority of support. So
that's the point. It requires a special majority. Without that, you should go to a special majority after the case, because then you obviously need the problem.
I think there's another way to do a procedural rules, not substantive aspects of rules. I'm quite clear. I'm sure I'm not there.
Okay.
So in fact,
that would be a little bit longer than I said, but it's necessary.
Okay, let's go.
Are we changing the wording about the proportion of representation in the assembly, or we are leaving that?
We are leaving there. And everything we are leaving there. Because there will always be proportional representation in the committee. For that reason, in line with the constitutional area that Julie was reading for us, I think we are leaving it that way. Unless you want to make a proposal.
My query was, and the council can help me, that we had amended membership of committees to reduce the number. So I want to know, how does that resolution in the House fit in with the rule of proportionality?
Yes, it says the committee substantially proportional. So this definitely accommodates.
It's not expected to cross post.
Substantial.
Just out of curiosity, in local government it's exactly the same problem. The composition of the executive committee, which is a maximum of 10 people, maybe a lot of parties, and so the constitutional dynamic of that also requires substantial representation. And in fact, the challenge to the court, and the court has ruled that it can't be strictly proportional because it's physically possible. So it's a non-issue.
Okay. We just have to move on 126 that we are hiring, that's one. But we are very easy to that.
My question
was for one. If a party doesn't identify its membership society and in the first province, the first meeting in court.
Well, they must have a membership. So that's one. But sometimes it's an administration problem, it's a lot of that. They want to participate, but they take long time. That's what point one person does. But that should not stop the committee or the support to start working. Mansoor, I wanted to
say. No, it's important. We actually would need
Submission. Well, I think there's no deadline, though. Well, it's supposed to be a deadline. I think there must be a deadline somewhere. If it's within 7 days, then you know that it's within 7 days. And yes.
The first meeting is after the establishment of the committee. The secretary must call a meeting of the committee within 5 working days after the names of the members have been announced. Now, if not all the names are announced, you can't call the first meeting.
Chair, the way the question was phrased, the problem was phrased, sorry, just now, was that the problem of members, the party not putting their members' names forward privately, was that it prevents the committee from working. And then you were saying, why should that be the case? Why can't committees simply continue anyway in the absence of members who have yet to be nominated? And obviously that would apply to anyone but a majority. So if there's a majority party or a combination of parties who constitute a quorum, the committee can immediately start work. So rather than change just the provision here, rather change the provision elsewhere, which says you can't start working until all the names are announced.
No. Let's change that. What I like to call never
in respect of ad hoc committees, the actual lines, you say that the ad hoc committee established by the assembly, the member must be appointed within 5 working days of the establishment committee. You should establish the speaker within 10 working days of the establishment committee.
Okay, well, I didn't cover that.
Should that not only ad hoc committee, should that not apply to all committees? In other words, the parties have 10 days into respond. To me, that makes sense. I think parties do have to be given deadlines. Unfortunately, there are individuals
I'm not talking necessarily partners, but individuals are going to create the link. And by putting in a time limit, that's covering Parliament, and then individuals must take responsibility for their inability to react to something.
So that's very Mandela. When we take a decision to set up specific areas, it's set up because the matter is urgent. Then you wouldn't want a situation where you wait for that. 10 days to apply. I don't think you have to pay the bill to submit a name in 10 days. But 10 days will be not necessary to start with this one. Of course, not on the corner, but on the victim of the problem. Should be free to come in there. But also, if they're not about the problem, if a smaller party is on one that seems to me, they seem to stay away. They seem to stay away. And that would die natural thing. Because we have taken a decision that we need that we are not going to attend that. We're going to call them out, but we're not going to send that in because we are not interested. It can also give them a bit of power. And then in a very bad. It would be unfair to do so, but the fact is that as we learn the rules and becoming expert on the rules, we can apply the rules to fill up completely everything in the house. And then we must set back the efficient operation of the house without anyone undermining us. So the party is having that right to appoint people on time, meet, and do it. Okay, that's fine. I didn't have that. Yes.
Chair,
okay, on
126, we've gone there.
126.
What are the conditions in one where someone other than the party to appoint members? Under what circumstances does somebody else appoint members of the committee other than the party?
I think the principle for the other committee is there's an option for the resolution for the House not just to appoint the other committee, but that a resolution already to include the names of the members who are going to be members of that committee. And as time saving measure, I think it's done in this country, for instance.
So there have been occasions in the past which has caused some dissent, where the committee of some nature is set up, or could even be a representation in something else other than the committee, where the speaker or the official, or somebody has basically said we want X to serve, and it has caused a bit of a problem with the party occasionally. And I'm just wondering why, whether that clause was necessary, and whether it served a particular purpose that was useful. The implication here is merely to say hi.
Some committees, like a program committee, your membership is ex officio almost. If you're a whip or you're this or that, you're a member of the committee by virtue of the office you hold.
Keep it for him,
for instance. And the rules committee, I think, to some extent. Program committee is.
That's your first second.
Well, let us close it then, and 128, we have 10 law for this already.
Of an ad hoc committee, appointed so the committee satisfies, as opposed to if the committee's work is done. Maybe that should include some of
that. The other committees have the right for separately. In section of Eric, which is coming later, there's a section on term of office, which talks about when your term of office as a member of subcommittee expires. So it's provided for
and stress that can develop in the house
maintain order in the House. In committees which are smaller bodies, the same disciplinary powers and powers of the chair do not exist. So the questions have arisen at various times when problems arise, when there's an attempt to disrupt proceedings by members of the committee or others, how does the chair deal with that? So I'm not sure there's clarity about it being powers of the committee to maintain order on the committee chair.
Yes, that's exactly my point. But I'm also to read it in conjunction, maybe, with 136 transgender members, because it's really legal with that. But that's my problem too. The chairs sometimes find it difficult to maintain order and do the rules of debate. I mean, I've said the rules of debate apply to committees, but it's been questioned.
Chair, what's the way? I mean, you get committee chairs who don't want to hear certain things said and try to close down discussion, and you get committee members who are obstinate and who insist on speaking when they talk to shut up. Now, I don't know how you create a balance here. I suppose we tend to rely on the maturity of committee members to avoid that kind of conflict. But it does happen sometimes where members will storm out of a committee meeting because they say the chair has been completely unfair, not letting anybody talk or raise points. The question is that correct, that chair has the prerogative to decide the agenda of the meeting? You actually simply by this fact he or she doesn't want to hear something. Now, I don't know. You could argue that's a political issue and it is taken out of the committee area into the civic arena. But to say that a chair, for example, should be able to throw members out of the meeting simply by virtue of the fact that they are being fulfilling their political role or raising matters which others may not want to hear is also a bit dodgy. So I don't know where you're going.
I know we're dealing with committees here, but where would we deal with chairpersons of EPC and the powers that they have? We had a wonderful show by one of the members of COPE, and I don't know whether that chairperson didn't have the power to do anything. Just a thought.
Well, I have to argue with
I agree with Peter that it's a delicate balance, but I have one very serious concern as well, and that is she performs the conscience, task, and duty, and exercise the powers that the committee may assign to the chairperson. You can't have a situation where a chairperson is assigned by a majority decision in the committee. Yet arrange programs whether the other members of the committee agree that we should proceed with this on a very urgent basis. But let Parliament pay out more hundreds of thousands of money for the whole staff to trip to Johannesburg for public hearing on a program that was not adopted in that committee. Now, if you have a general thing, a committee can assign it.
We've assigned this control to the chairperson. Chairperson can go ahead and do whatever he or she likes.
You've got that. If you cannot control, it is a committee of Parliament. And the same principle that says Parliament must function in accordance with the constitutional right and respect multi-party democracy and the composition of Parliament as delegates of people who voted for them. You can't control such general powers to a chairperson. So we have to remove this. We have to adapt. This must come from the apartheid regime.
Jim, I think that both Mr. Smith and Mr. Killian have spoken a huge amount of sense on this very important issue. What can recall some of these moments of my own life involved with one particular chairman in particular, I much want to say, trying to throw me out of the committee because he didn't like what I was saying. Now, say you've got to be remarkably careful, and that's just my case, I don't know if many others. I think you want to be very careful about what powers you do give to the chairman of the committee. Presiding officers obviously have been endorsed by all of us. Chairmen of committees are not. Some are good and some are bad. And that is the very real substance of the matter. But I think that Mr. Skinner raises a very important point too with regard to the functions of a chairperson that can be allocated to the chairperson by the committee itself. She made the point.
Well, the point I would like to raise is that members have tonight of free speech and debate in the House and the committee. And then the presiding officer, equally as well as responsibility to run a meeting. And then the rule on three functions, a member presiding at the meeting of a committee in the month, as well as the proceedings of the meeting, or the change a date, or for the introduction of business. If there is an unruly, disorderly discourse in the meeting, the chairperson will not be helpless. They should be able to take steps to prevent it. It may not be the power to reject it, but certainly we are being advised to subscribe to the decorum of the House and put on the distance of the committee installed. The chair should be permitted to stop the meeting.
I'd sort of respond to the issue of the committee giving the assigned powers and functions to the chair. You have to tie that in with the general powers of committees, which include, and I think it's important that it should include, that the committee determines its own procedures. It is free to decide how and when to go about its business, how to map out its agenda, to set time frames, who it can call as witnesses, etc. Those are all powers of the committee. And so it's recognized that the committee has considerable powers, and they include the extent to which they're going to allow the chair to do various things on their behalf. If you look at the rest of sub 2, the chair can do all kinds of things with the committee, 129 sub 2. There's all kinds of things that the committee chair may do when the committee is inconvenient to call the chair committee meeting. But in all of those cases, you'll see that sub 3 provides that the chairperson must report to the committee on any steps taken in terms of sub-rule 2B. So there is the recognition in this rule as well that the power resides with the committee, not with the committee chair. And just to respond to the other point made by Ms. Killian was about committees going off on jaunts by their own decision when they've assigned that kind of power to the chair to arrange it. The committee may not do any of those things without the approval of Chief Whip, who must have consulted the Speaker, so that in terms of possible finances, there is cover for that. That's covered in Rule 223. The intention is that there must be political and institutional control when a committee exceeds what it may properly do in the performance of its functions.
I would look at Sub D.
Sub D, 2D.
So for clarity, in the event of a committee not having a quorum, the committee is able to co-opt members and members for the purpose of doing business. Right? But that clause also applies here. In other words, if there is a quorum, but an issue before the committee may be lost in the vote or may have an equality vote, is that committee entitled to bring in co-opted members in addition to change the balance of power of the committee as it stood at a point of which would make the vote? Is that possible?
I would say that one has to allow for the possibility that it may be possible. So in a committee of, the committee is 12 members, and then there's one member missing, you've got a quorum, and you end up with equality of votes of two sides. Perhaps in a different parliament, different composition in terms of party representation and so on. This provides for any parliament, regardless of the number of parties and the size of the parties, in a situation where there's an equality of votes on two sides of the question. The chair has deliberate vote, ordinary vote as a member, but also a casting vote. And as a matter of interest, when the chair exercises a casting vote, the principle that's applied internationally is that the chair should always cross their vote in such a way as to keep the issue open rather than close it down.
Yeah, maybe. I'm not actually clear. What I mean is, we have a rule that if a committee is meeting and it doesn't have a quorum, it can co-opt members. Right. Now, my question is not whether there is a quorum, but the majority are not present to cast a vote of the majority. The opposition has the majority of votes at that particular meeting. At that point, is the clause we referred to just now, for example, where 135, where they permit the check just thoroughly stop proceedings because they're going to be outvoted, or can they go up to further members for the purposes of ensuring a majority vote at that meeting? Is that the way it actually works in these rules?
Can you just tie that in with Rule 133, sub 3, which can be able to decide a question and the quorum is not present. A member presiding may either suspend business until the quorum is present or adjourn the meeting. Those are the two options.
I said there's no quorum.
When there is a quorum based on members being co-opted,
without their being co-opted. There's a quorum now. I'm in the chair, there's a vote, and for some reason I don't have sufficient members to vote in my favour. Can I co-opt further members then to boost the numbers to ensure that the members can?
I suppose so. If you have a quorum, there's not, there's been a majority, there's not been. In other words, when the majority is not in a majority, when the ANC is not in a majority, can you have a quorum?
I'm talking about beyond the current parliament.
Beyond the current
parliament, that might be. In terms of Rule 134, it does not appear that the rule is meant for a quorum, a caution of members. So you could call off members, even if it's not about the quorum, to boost the numbers.
Okay. Okay. I just want to make sure. So you see, the functioning of omnibus at the is very unprecedented. If there is a formal resolution about the delegation of power to the in a fully fledged committee, and it's a reasonable delegation, you know, a formalization of that, it's fine. This looks like a carte blanche, and it doesn't look as though it requires an upfront decision. The committee must formally decide when it convenes. And this committee, chairperson, in this committee, in appointments, take some of the committees where Honourable Joan Clark the chairperson. Now, anybody fully complimented with the staff in the committee will not be at the end of the term. But the point is, she worked very hard. Now, she's one of those chairmen where you will decide, let us give her X, Y, and Z as formal delegated style as a committee chair. She will engage, will work with a committee coordinator. But some of the other committees, you have a situation where doing not in the interest, because it's a beautiful paraphrase that we have here. On behalf and in the best interest of the committee, when it's not practical to arrange a meeting. Very, very beautiful, noble ideal. But is it happening? And how I see mine is laughing. You see, we must make sure that we start functioning like a very serious, real parliament. That chairpersons have the powers, they have the authority. That committee formally sort of just describe what those authorities are powers for and agree in terms before it's to that sanction.
So I think there's quite a lot of issues raised in respect of Rule 129. We talked about the order and committees, we talked about obviously the powers of the chairperson, which are related. I'm not sure we've really made a lot of progress in shouldn't be, I mean, these rules are, especially in relation to committees, based predominantly on Westminster. You don't have an American committee system where, for example, chairpersons have much wider powers than they do in our parliament. So I wonder if we should do more research in other parliaments about how they patrol, if you like, how they regulate the powers of their chairpersons, and come back to this commission, because otherwise I'm not sure we can come up, I mean, then obviously there might be very practical proposals now, so perhaps we should keep the question open.
Yes.
If the manual that Killian actually referred to is tended to sort of on a regular basis, does it actually dealt with any specific in there?
Usually.
The state of the state here is going to be done in democratic order. Well, then we've got to take to the doctrine in the rules.
Well, I think that there will be lots of documents everywhere. And I think also Tim Marshall also saying that there's someone that they've done. I think Carson and the team, they will file and they will take all those proposals that have been made over here. Because some of the areas may be worried about here, we may find that there's one document somewhere that we have right here. I think we'll take that one and do it.
I think Christian raises a very important point. On the one hand, we've got the rules. And as you say, they're beautifully phrased. And I didn't do it, by the way. On the other hand, we've got the actual practices. And they are not consistent with what's in the rules. And that's the problem. Now, do you then try to amend the rules further? Or do you address the practical application of the rules and ensure that the members apply them properly? Do you challenge members when they don't apply the rules as they stand here? In my view, the rules as drafted are, if anything, too comprehensive and too detailed, but they are intended to cover practices to the extent that a good practice develops and is maintained. If these rules are ignored, as seems to be the case too often, then you get this free for all, where members usurp, or chairs usurp powers they shouldn't usurp. And they're not challenged when they do it. So it's important that members must be more conscious of the rules and what the rules allow the chairs to do and not to do. And partly that's a question of training, partly it's a question of ensuring that the manual is sufficiently informative to provide the background information. It may be that we need those annotated set of rules to assist here as well. But the question fundamentally is, do we change the rules to try and put more stringent things in place to prevent chairs from usurping powers and using powers they don't have? Or do we try to bureaucratize this closer to where the rules are right now?
Well, I guess that's as far as we are saying, 19 years of your experience. What is working, what is not working, what we should discard, what we should improve. And then if there's an area to improve, we improve the area, there's an area to discard, we discard it. But they're informed by 19 years of experience. The weakness of individual who can't design a rule to deal with the weakness of the chairperson if he doesn't know how to chair a proper committee. But also can't also design a rule to assist members who know the rules. Therefore, the rules that stand is helping us there. Because the members have back to their art of using the rule. I think Ed will come back, I think, to do that, some lessons on that. And then sometimes we have a battle here and there. But I think you know how to use the rules. I think that's the only issue. A member of parliament doesn't know how to use the rules. Can't be used. You can't be a good member of parliament. Because I have to change every rule, because one chef has come, one is making a man to change the rule. Another just doesn't make a mess, another comment to change the rule. I think can't work that way. And then, I think the rule is the same. Covers all the areas that we have to cover. So we have three parallel areas that we can do some research here and then we can also do that. But at the same time, it covers how to do it. The podcast issues, how people then do in the community, the separate thing. I think the community is in my report that they're forming a single one. Using the same rule, the auto committee is becoming very not because members are not interested, that the chairperson sometimes doesn't understand the rules, sometimes there's no experience of doing this. Therefore, the rules are the same, there's no issue about it, in my view.
what is the need to raise is the capacity of members to apply the rules, but also shepherds in them more capacity to apply the rules accordingly. There will be no harm for a member that here from time to time the shepherds and then stray away from the rules. Hey, no, rule 1, page 129, that's this one, doesn't say we should do it. Because we won't then the rule for application. You can't read the rules and unpack the aspect. Every day you apply them, you understand the implication of the rule. And then I think that's what we should do.
The committee chair, like the presiding officer in the House,
yeah,
not just have a party responsibility,
yeah,
but has responsibility for the entire committee,
yeah,
and has taken a lot of decisions on behalf of
the committee, yeah,
and must know that usually is not acting for the committee rather than for a party. And many committee chairs realize that and are seeing committee chairs operating in a way where they are accommodating opposition views,
yeah,
in particular.
Well, in the experience of individuals, sometimes I will take the study groups, I will do whatever they do, but the experience problem is not the root problem. Yeah, then I think we should move on to the one that, I think the acting one really can be a bigger issue. And
which one?
The monitoring.
Yeah, 134. 130 says that if the chairperson is absent or unable to perform the function, the committee may elect another member. And I think that should be a must. Because if the committee doesn't elect another member, it becomes it. I've heard in days of your reports to the program committee that this committee has not met for 6 months because the committee chair has been in hospital, something like that. And it's been very clear at the program committee meetings, but it's important of it. And that's what should happen. So I think it should be must,
yeah,
not made.
Yeah.
Yep, there's
the
There's also a convention that there is a whip for particular committees, or for most committees, and in ANC, and in the absence of the chairperson, the whip is usually asked to chair.
Mm-hmm.
You see chairperson, that's again, one of the practices that are found is a convention that they act a healthy allocation. It's an ANC work. And, you know, when we started here, in some committees, the ANC work wanted to work the other members. And I said to my members, that's an ANC work. Thank you very much. Don't be working. So it cannot be. Now, all I want to ask is, in the absence of the
committee. Let us take a point. Yeah, don't forget us, weeks. Are we called committees? No, they're not group of ANC. They are secretary people anyway. They are appointed by parliament by the rules of trade. No, no, but they are appointed. The government party says so and so, they are group. And that person, by very nature, is a group of the committee.
No,
you can't. What is the whip then all about? Can't you whip of the ANC?
Another point is every party is entitled to nominate whips. All the whips of every political party are put through as whips of parliament. The fact that the ANC puts through a specific whip to deal with a specific party is not a parliamentary issue that is an ANC.
No, 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 but what do I know about this? That's a flash. Because I immediately
wanted to see in terms of which rules are these whips to commit these appointments. And you know, I discovered, but it's ancient system. So obviously, we're ignoring it. Now, I just wanted to know, in the absence of the chairperson, I mean, obviously we don't think that all politics sit here in the IT system. In the absence of the chairperson, if this one, what section 131, what the cut is the chairperson usually crown his substitute, acting chairperson. In a committee, the chairperson, the secretary, who should say, the chairperson cannot be here today, can the committee please appoint a substitute?
I think what we should avoid is when people are not following their rules and making that a system rule. Their rule says, if the chairperson is not there, remember the committee is not
there.
But in a public affair, a government party is in majority in that committee, they will appoint whoever. Maybe a week, maybe another member for that area. It doesn't really cause Mohammed. But the committee as a whole will stand and say, you nominate those. In fact, you can nominate another person, right? In a company, it doesn't have to tend to nominate what they have decided themselves to do when the chairperson is not there. It doesn't necessarily say that it's not in terms of the rules. Yeah, no, fine. We have to have the
rules. Chairman, my question to you is, does that work a member of the committee, I wouldn't think you want the appointee to the committee, is he? That's the problem with you. It cannot record the...
whole issue of calling in members will take refuge. I actually have a problem with people who are not members of a committee coming in to take refuge because they don't understand and they don't know what's going on in that committee. And my personal opinion is that if the member of that committee cannot be present, the meeting needs to be adjourned. I really think that we've got to look at this. I mean, I know nothing about minerals and energy. And I come and I took on minerals and energy, and it's a major issue. I know nothing about it. And I vote because I'm voting with my party. But I actually don't know what I'm voting on. That's not right. And I think that we need to think that one through some of it.
No, I wanted to raise, though, before Mrs. Midgard, we are sitting on this room. I really think, though, I know that they haven't had to stop on this. I think no meeting should start unless. But this thing, which you can discuss everything under the sun, but you can't take this issue, you are wasting time of members. You are wasting time of members. The meeting starts because there's a quorum. People can then disappear after that. I think the point that I've raised is that what can make that meeting there for 2 hours? We know very well that you don't have a call. But the meeting starts. The meeting starts because there's a call. That's what it's
called.
Yes. The important one to come and vote is a separate issue. I'm saying that the formal meeting of a committee should start before every call. And then start the meeting on that. The point that we take this issue, no matter, it doesn't matter if there's the reason. Malin Malaria, when he calls the meeting of the higher education committee, it should take place and take this issue. When is it?
It's no quorum. And I mean, the meeting is properly constituted. That's not to be able to do. And I think the line that which is put in the rules, in my view, that permits a meeting to continue without a quorum. It could be for purposes of receiving the information from the public. So I think there's no problem.
Which is verified. Yes. You verified the individual. You can have a meeting on that because of the process. But I know that the rules committee meeting is not something that's not possible.
Committee is a sign of activity. The next sign of power.
speak to the next member of parliament, I think that you should respect. Otherwise, that's just the kind of thing. Of course, in parliament, if you have your rules, when you have to deal with the normal thing, you need 51%, you need 1/3 member. I think that's fine, you can do that. But if committees are taking the auxiliary as the next member, surely this shouldn't be easy for people just to sit there. There are 10 of them. Anyway, remember the boss part when you are moving to further north. That was last one day. You are moving one day straight, you are called, go to a meeting. The poor place in Osaka is really in the park. You are calling there, there's a civil issue. And then there's a vote, and you are sitting there, you are voting. You know what is your voting for? The boss member of the committee, no. They do that and tell them that I don't go on that. That's a weak issue, and for coming in, it's a country where they vote. But I think committees are very important. Okay. Very important in parliament, in the public, also the public public. I do think that members work full time. We don't need every week in the committee of parliament. We work every week. So you must call a quorum. Quorum of our committee now is 7 members. Yes, yes. And the 7 members must be there. The bodies must be there. We form a quorum, 7 meeting, and do the rest of the quorum. I think we should then really try to repeal that task of respecting quorum. Of course, there will be a situation where maybe members of this meeting, as we are leaving at 1, doesn't mean that they can't continue our meeting. But when we started the meeting, there was a call on the House, then can be supervised. What the House will be issued about motion for debate, general debate, may not be a call on the debate. But I'm just saying we must look at it. So this is a little bit
of a call.
No, my view though, separate this thing from party management. Otherwise, we shouldn't do that one. You wanted to conclude?
Well, I know, just thought about the comment on this issue. Chair, I think it's not practical. It's nice principle, but the rules also need to be practical. The point is, if you apply that rule, the reality is you're going to get a crew from Tory arriving at huge cost. They'll sit there all morning, go back again, and you have to incur huge costs to bring them down again, because the reality is that you do not have quorum at the commencement of the meeting, and they don't arrive until a lot later. So I think it's a nice idea, but is it practical? Or, alternatively, you make it a requirement, and all they do is co-opt exit. They just say, okay, we wait 10 minutes, come in next door, go and make it, please you come here, quorum, and bring our short meeting down again. So it's not going to do anything. So I don't really see any particular merit in doing that route. It's a nice idea, very much work. And maybe one along the same time, because 134 and 133 kind of go together. On 133, I do have a bit of a problem with the notion that if I'm not in a committee representing my party, that the ANC chair can call in an ANC member to replace me in that committee. That surely can't be right. I would like the words, or any other ANC member from the same party,
okay,
to be inserted there.
To import our own party there.
Yeah.
Not another party.
Yeah.
And then
I
think
you can't call
women. No. Of course, I'll call them sometimes. But of course, it can't work that way. And I think the point that though, I wanted to raise it up here. We should not control citizens. That's because members are health citizens, therefore the room must allow them to continue to repeat that. We all know that is not. In other meetings, you argue for quorum, I think, to me. In other meetings, you say, no, it's fine, you can do whatever you like. I think that's all. It would be consistent in what you're trying to do. The rules should be consistent also for us to discuss it. And if you can say this side, no, not the quorum, and then because this area, Nadine is down the line, you can't open quorum for members who are full time anyway. Then you say, no, ignore this one. Not me. I don't want you to choose. You can cause problems on that. Do you want us to make a point of that?
Yes, on that one, I actually endorse what you say. There's no excuse for members not to be there. It will happen once or twice, and it will be such a public embarrassment that members and their party groups will take action to make sure that they're there, otherwise parties are embarrassed in
public.
I'm afraid that you're now so scared of Judy Killian that you're going to see her hand before you see anybody else's anymore.
She's very nice.
I think, I just want to emphasize what the word discipline is all. Because that's really underlying principle you talk about. everything that we're talking about here deals with the discipline of method. And I agree with you, sir. While Peter Smith is absolutely right, you can create rules, actually don't work. They will only not work because you let them not work. And you've got to try to overcome that problem. But what your approach, sir, is that I commend fully, and I hope that we can devise something that will make it work.
I think it's quite easy to accommodate the words already say a committee may proceed with business irrespective of the number of members present, proceed instead of continue. But it should be quite possible to put something in that says the committee may not begin its work until there's a quorum. Once it's a quorum, it proceeds, and then if members have other business to attend to, you can your witnesses in for Pretoria or wherever. Yeah. But you should not have to then commence unless you are fully constituted committee meeting.
You're not dealing with the situation, the real problem. You then still also be bringing people in that have nothing to do with that committee.
No,
with all due respect, how can decisions be taken when people who know nothing about the subject are listening and taking in the information? It's incorrect. It must be, I agree that one needs to proceed with it. If you've got a delegation, put a procedure on a delegation coming from somewhere, even from Cape Town. Then you need to proceed with the work as questions cannot, and take a decision on the matter. But to bring in, I am totally opposed to bringing in other people that do not serve on the committee. It is not appropriate.
Well, look at that. Let us break for
lunch.
you can think about it, but come and say.
Thank you.